Okay, we're going to start here at the top of Kuf Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph. We're continuing with the Gemara from yesterday, where the Gemara is really discussing when do we have what's called an Umdana. When do we have this understanding or thought that the grant by the individual who's passing away is simply an indication, number one, that they're an executor of the estate. Number two, the possibility that it's a Matana Gemura, that's a full gift to them. And number three, which is the issue that we're going to be discussing again today, is what does that mean for the woman? The woman who accepts such a gift, how does that impinge or affect her ketubah? So now we're going to start two lines down, at the last word on the line. Someone went ahead and distributed his property to his wife and to his children. So this is what we had discussed. Someone who is called that a woman who is collecting ben abanim, she is a mishutaf ben abanim, which Rav Nachman described before, and there a woman in general loses her ketubah. But in this case, he did one other thing, which is she'er chad diklo. He left over one dekel, one palm tree that he did not distribute. So he distributed all of his land, and he distributed that between his children and his wife. So had he left nothing, then she would have lost her ketubah. But in this case, he leaves over one dekel that he did not distribute to anyone. So Savir Saba Ravina Lamemar, Leitla, Elech Adikla. So Ravina wants to suggest that just like in the case where he had left nothing over, all she gets is the land that was granted to her. So too over here. Over here, you would say the same thing, that she's granted the land that was given to her, and she forfeited her ketubah. The only thing left for her to collect her ketubah from is that dekel. So she'll get whatever land, or whatever was granted to her by her husband, plus a dekel. As opposed to a case where there is no dekel, she'll just get the land that was granted to her. So Amar Le Rav Yemar, the Ravino, right? If she gets nothing here, meaning that if she's considered shutaf ben abanim, if she's considered to be included or distributed her property already, and be mochelet an ketubata, that means that she's going to make no claim against the property that was distributed to the children. Why? Because she knew about it. She knew about it, and she was mochelet. So do by the dekel, right? Chad dekel navilet law. Then she should have no rights in the dekel whatsoever. Meaning that if it's all about what she knows at the time that the property is distributed, and she knows all of this, she knew about the children's property, and she was mechalet, and she took away her shibud from them. She knew about the dekel, so let's say that the gift of property to her also made her be mechalet on that dekel. But that's not what we say. Ella, what do we say? Migo de nachta le dikla, nachta nami le kulu nichsei. But the fact is that because she has a right to claim from this dekel, why does she have a right to claim from the dekel? Because the dekel wasn't distributed to anybody else in the estate. Anything that's in the estate, even if she knows about it, is mishubad to her ketubata. And so, Rav Yemar suggests, Ravina over here, just like she has a right to go and collect from this dekel because it's part of the estate, so too she does not forfeit her right to go ahead and collect from all the possessions. That means including that which was distributed to her children. So that means even though in general, if he distributed, the husband or the father distributed all the property to the children and the wife would get nothing besides what she was granted by her husband. Nevertheless, when there's any property left over, we say no. Then, once she has a right to collect from that property, we do not say there's an umdana that she was mochelet, her rights when it comes to the children, and she figures she will collect from the children as well. What's the reasoning behind this? So the Rishbam explains the reason that she was silent over here and said nothing at this time is because he left her a dekel, he left her a palm tree. She's uncertain as to the value of that palm tree. So she's going to have to go to Beis Din and find out, get assessment of how much that palm tree is worth, and then take her ketubah from the residual. But until she finds out what the palm tree is worth, it's not worth her making a big ruckus and upsetting the overturning the apple cart. And therefore she says, listen, I'll go to Beis Din, I'll find out what the dekel's worth, and then after that, I'll be my heir. I will question why the children got this property, because it really belongs to me, or I have a first right to this property, and I will get whatever is left over, whatever is not paid through this dekel, I will go and collect. So over here, in this case, her shtika, her silence, as opposed to the case where all the property is distributed, we say her silence is a silence of acquiescence, a silence that says, I'm accepting this gift, I'm being mochelet on my shibud to collect my ketubah. That is not true in this case, but in this case, we say that her silence is just a delay until she finds out more information. She needs more information to know what was left for her, meaning the dekel. Once she knows what the dekel is worth, then she'll make her claim. But in the interim, it's not worth her time, or she doesn't want to upset her husband and make a whole stink about it now, so she waits until she finds out what the value of the dekel is. So now the Rosh Hashanah actually writes a quick summary of our sugya until this point in time, which is just worthwhile. We'll take a look at it for 1 second. It says it's down opposite where the Hagosa Bach is in the on the side here on the right. There's a little dot in the middle of the Rosh Hashanah. He says, V'hashka. Shamina amihocha. We learn from this. The Shchimira akutev kol nichasav. Shchimira writes all of his property. O mechalek the banav bifnei ishto. Or distributes his property to his children in front of his wife. V'gam la natan karka koshu. And he gives her, he grants her at least any portion in the karka, anything whatsoever. V'shatka v'lorira. Over there, she was silent and did not question it. V'u'adein imkatav kol nichasav l'achirim bifanav. Same is true if he writes all of his property away to someone else in front of her. And for her, she gets any small piece of property. In that case, we consider it a mochelet shibuda. In that case, where there is no property going to come into the estate because he's a shechiv meira, so there is no chance she will collect her ktuba in the future. That's number one. Number two is that she was granted some property. The fact that she accepted that property and allowed the rest of the property to be distributed to others, that she's mochelet in that case, that she's mochelet shibuda, and therefore the gift to the children, the gift to the third parties is a complete gift, and she has no rights to go and claim her ketubah from that. So that's what we had learned until this point. The idea that if all the property is distributed, that was yesterday's daf, and she's included in that distribution, she's aware of that distribution, it's done in front of her or written in front of her, either way, she was considered to be mochelet shibuda, and she may no longer go and collect from the parties that this was distributed to because she was mechalat on shibuda in shibuda, and that is like what we said yesterday, like Rav Nachman, that because she's a shutaf ben abanim, just because she's a party to this whole distribution, then she's of dak tubata. Now the sa shutaf tayu milta. That's the whole issue here is whether she's shutaf lo shnayim bnav velo shnayim acherim. Doesn't matter who it's with. As long as she's a party to whatever distribution is, whether it's to his children, whether it's to the third party, then that considers there we consider it to be mochelet. Also here, if he distributes all his property to his wife and his inheritors, if he leaves even one palm tree over, that's any karka, right? And that he doesn't distribute. There he leaves it and doesn't distribute it anywhere. Migo. Right, the hadra dikla hadra and after the megavai kula nechsej, because now she's retained the right to go and collect from that deko, she also retains a right to go and collect from everyone. There is no mechila here, velo machlamide, and she was not mochelet at all. So in this case, that's today's daf that we just saw. Is that if there's anything left over which she has a right to claim her ketubah from, in that instance we say that she has a right to collect from everyone because she says, "Let me wait and find out what the value of that is object is, and then I'll make my objection after I know how much I need to collect afterwards." Now, this is, of course, bedaf mishkatav la karka koshu, as long as he leaves her some sort of property. But if he gives her metaltalim, if he gives her, in this distribution, non-real property, and not karka, then she's not classified as a shutaf ben abanim. And therefore, we don't consider it to be a mechila. The only way we consider it to be a mechila is if she's distributed property. So we said at the end of yesterday's daf that it's property that needs to be distributed and not mital talim. Now, again, bahani milay daav de ktubata mahanu nechsai shukatuv levanav. Right? If that's all has to do with the fact that she's trying to collect her ktuba from the property that he granted to the children. But if the estate, acquires property subsequent to this distribution, even from the property that was distributed to the children, either it's bought back from the children, children pass away, and therefore it's inherited by the father, in that instance, the wife has the right to collect her ktubah from that property. Because we say that's as if new property entered in, and we say that her mechilah, the shibud, is only back, looking backwards. It's not looking forward. Prospectively, she still has a right to collect with ketubah. And that's what we ended yesterday's daf with Rav Kahana, that once you have new property or enters into the estate, or even property that was distributed already, but you had a lien on that property, but you waive the lien to the individual, but not on the property. So therefore, when the property comes back into the estate, you're allowed to collect from it. Now, this is also only true, davka b'shchiv meira. It's only true when we're talking about a shchiv meira, because we learned yesterday that was true of a shchiv meira. When it came to a bari, we left the Gemara, left it as a teku. So we know this is all true. Everything we're talking about, all this that we just discussed, is all about a shchiv meira making the distribution. But when a bari makes a distribution, we don't know what to do because it says teku, and a motzi mechaveiro alav haraya. So that therefore the woman will have to bring a raya to collect her property, because over here property was distributed. So whoever's machzik in the property is the one who's considered the one that we have to be motzi from. Therefore, the woman who wants to be motzi from the banav has to prove that by a bari, right, that she's intended from it. The only question we have is tafis. If she goes in and grabs the property, and here the Rishbam lays out a principle that manda tafis. That when it comes to a teku, anytime there is a din teku in the Gemara, if you go ahead and grab it and say that the din must be this way, or I think the din is this, then you're considered to have taken possession of it, and a motzi mechaver alavaraya changes around. It flips the motzi mechaver alavaraya, and you can keep the property unless the other person can prove that they are owed the property. So that was the Rashbam, just a quick summary of what we saw yesterday's daf, which said, yes, by shchiv meira, by bari, it's a teku. Even by shchiv meira, it has to be a distribution of all of its property with her getting property, not just metalfalim, she has to get property as well. Now, number three is that it doesn't matter whether the distribution is to her and the children, her and other parties. As long as she's included in that distribution, whoever the other parties are, we consider it to be mochelet al shibuda. And then the last thing we said, which was today's daf, which is that once there's some property left over in the estate, the fact that there's property left over in the estate, we do not assume an automatic mechila by her on the ketubah, because the property left over, she will be somechet on to get her ketubah, and then whatever the residual is, she'll go and collect. So we know the fact that she's already relying on that piece, we assume that she will then collect the residual from whoever owns the property, and she's not mochelet over here. And again, we said, the Rishbam said this over and over and over again, we've mentioned it, that this is all retroactively, meaning that from the time of the distribution, she is mochelet backwards, but prospectively, she's not mochelet for any new property that comes into the estate. Even from those that were distributed originally, that property she'll be entitled to collect her ketubah from. Okay, so now, we have a case here of Rav Huna. So, Amar Rav Huna. Shchimira, shkotav kol nechasav lacher. Person, shchimira goes ahead and writes away all his property to someone else. We see, if this individual is a possible heir, then we say that it's distributed to them as a Yerusha. If that's not the case, it takes them because of a gift. I mean that the Shchimira granted them a gift. So, Amar Le Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman said to him, Ganva Gnuve Lamaloch, why are you a thief? Why are you secretly making your statements? Meaning that here it seems that your distribution takes on one of two forms. You're saying that the shchiv meira is distributing property. There are two ways to distribute property. One is derech yerusha. One is derech matana. Now there's only one person who lets you distribute property derech yerusha, and that's a position we've seen on the Kuf Lamed in the Mishnahs, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says you're allowed to rejigger the property to those proper yoshim. And so here, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, if you're holding like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, why don't you say that? Why are you hiding who you hold like? Why are you making it unclear what your position is? So that's what he says. Why are you secreting away or secretly making a statement? If you hold like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, just say it. Come out and say that the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Because it's clear that your statements over here are like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, because you're saying that a shchiv meira gives away property, can give it away either derech yerusha or derech matana. There's only one person who believes that you can give it away derech yerusha, and that's Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. So say that. Dilma kiha kedamart. Right, so maybe the reason that you didn't say that is because you're trying to, your position is somewhat like another case that we have. The person was passing away, was in his deathbed. Right, so they said, who do you want to distribute your property to? Dilma Laplanyo, maybe to so-and-so. Who else? Right? Meaning that when they said to him, when they suggested this person, he says, well, who else? So that's an indication that he wants to give it. If you are, again, if this individual is ra'oi to be an inheritor, then they take him b'shem inheritance. You get it because of a matana, you get it because of a gift. Exactly, that's what I was suggesting. I was suggesting the case of Shchimira, the Ravuna quotes before, is exactly like that case. When your Shchimira makes a distribution, and there are two possible ways that distribution can be manifested. It can be manifested as Yerusha, it can be manifested as a Matana. So we look and we see whether it's Yerusha or Matana. So the Gemara asks the obvious question, the Mayhilcha, so what's the difference? Well, in the end, the person gets the property. Why do we care if it goes to them Derech Yerusha or Derech Matana? So Savar of Adabrava, Kameh Durabal, Meimar, he wanted to suggest over here that the nafkamina is Imra Yerli Yersho Amana To Nizona Tamina Chasav. We have a principle, which is that when the individual passes away, his wife, I mean really, Mina Torah, what should happen is, the children will inherit, or whoever the proper heirs are will inherit, and the wife has a claim against the estate for her ketubah. She's a creditor, she can come in and take out her creditor, and that will all be fine. But the Rabbanan instituted that a woman is entitled not only to get her ketubah, but if she does not collect her ketubah, she can remain in the estate and eat and be fed out of the estate. She can be supported out of the estate. She gets mizonot from the estate. As long as she does not collect on her ketubah, she can get mizonot out of the estate. So that's an institution to Rabbanan. So we'd say that maybe that's only true when it was a Yerusha. When it's a Yerusha, that's where the Chachamim instituted their idea that when there's a Yerusha here, the Yorshim will have to support the Almanah. But that would not be true of a gift, of Matana. If you gifted the item to the other individual, that person wouldn't be subjected to this residual that they'd have to feed the Almanah. Semele Rava Migra Garo. Because you gave it a gift, she loses out. I mean, that's worse. Why? Hashta b'Yerusha de'oraita. When it comes to Yerusha, which is something min haTorah, meaning that the heirs, that say the children here, the sons, who collect the property from their father, they're collecting that min haTorah. The woman has no rights to that estate whatsoever min haTorah. Nevertheless, Amar Amunatan Nizonet Nechazav. Nevertheless, the Chachamim instituted that the Almanah is entitled to get mizonot, even though technically min haTorah, she has no rights to this property except for her ketubah, which she can come and collect as a creditor. But the Chachamim still instituted a mizonot in the face of Yerusha, which is min d'oraisa. Min haTorah, these children own the property now. They have no obligation to give anything to the Almanah. Nevertheless, the Chachamim instituted, they give her mizonot. If she doesn't take her ketubah. It's only if she doesn't. If she collects her ketubah, she's out of the estate, and then she can't collect anything. Yes, that's right. That's what the Gemara says. In lasof, that these are things that have no end. She can stay in there. Now the question of who's the Gemara talks, the Mishnah talks about, and discusses another in Ketubot, whether it's the choice of the Yitomim or the choice of the Almanah, who gets to make the choice whether she stays in the estate or not. So whether it's the Almanah's choice or the Yitomim's choice, that's subject to a machlokas. But if her Ketubah is not collected, she has the right to collect those mizonot. Right, b'matana derabbanan. Over here, when we're talking about a gift derabbanan, okay, shekein. What do you mean a gift derabbanan? Because who's gifting over here? It's a shchimira. A shchimira gifting is not a din min haTorah because there's no kinyan. There's no formal kinyan here. We just say the Chachamim made an institution that a shchimira, someone on their deathbed, is ketuvim u'misurim dami. That if they say they want to grant property to someone, that it's considered as if it's written and given over. I mean, it's as if there was some formal kinyan. But it's not true. It's an institution, midirabbanan. So over here, where you have a distribution of property or changing ownership of property midoraisa from a father to a son, nevertheless, you fed the almanah is allowed to eat out of that estate. Then here, when you're talking about a gift midirabbanan, a shchimira, which is a gift midirabbanan, certainly over there, she should be able to collect mizonot out of it. So that can't be the nafkamina. That nafkamina doesn't sound right. Because when you give a gift, she's going to be worse off than if she gave the Yerusha. Yerusha is midiraisa, and we still say she gets it. So certainly by matana, the rabbanan, she would still get it. So El Amar Rava, Rava suggests like this. Kedeshalach Rav Acha bar Rav Avira. This is the nafkamina. The divrei Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. According to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, nichsai ducha v'acharecha leploni. He says, my property is granted to you, and after you to someone else. I mean, this is again the remainder trust. where he says that I grant it to you, whatever's left over when you pass away will pass to the next individual. So that chain. Imaya Rishon Ra'uy Li Yorsho. If the first individual could have inherited him, Ein L'Sheni B'Makom Shom Klum. The second individual gets nothing. She'ein L'Shon Matana El L'Shon Yerusha. Because it's not a gift, but rather Yerusha. V'Yerusha Ein La'Hefsek. And Yerusha does not stop, or I mean it does not have any break in it. So what does that mean? We just saw this before also. We had the same claim when we're looking at the Mishnah, how to explain Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka in the Mishnah. The same thing over here. What was the, back on Kul Chavtad Amud Bet. So now, here we said, wait a minute. There are two ways that the gift can be granted, distribution can be granted. It can be granted as Yerusha, it can be granted as Matana. Now, if you can grant it as Yerusha, the underlying assumption is that you will do it as Yerusha. Why? Because then you're working under Yerusha Doraisa. According to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, when you rejigger the distribution to the children, you're doing this under a framework or a rubric of Doraisa, Yerusha Doraisa. So if you have a choice to grant something to the children as a gift, or grant it to them as a Yerusha, you obviously grant it as Yerusha, because that's functioning under the Torah's framework for Yerusha. So even though you rejiggered it and didn't give exactly what the Torah says, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says that's entitled to you, Minat Torah. The distribution is your right, Minat Torah. Nevertheless, we want you to, the person will always opt to grant it as Yerusha. So here, if he has a choice to grant it as Yerusha, Matana, we're going to say he's always opts to Yerusha. So now, if the person makes this distribution and says, after you, it'll be distributed to someone else. Well, now it depends, the first individual, how they accept it, how they receive it. If they receive it as a Matana, then you can have a gift that has a condition in it. The gift is good to you, but when you pass away, it'll pass someone else. You're allowed to, when you gift something to someone, you're allowed to set the stipulations or the conditions of the gift. So that's the same here. The stipulation and the conditions of the gift are going to go to you, and then after you, it'll go to this other person. That's fine. But when it comes to Yerusha, if you distribute it to the individual as Yerusha, then you're functioning under the Torah. The Torah says once something is granted as Yerusha, you have no rights. There are no residual rights. Yerusha is a full and complete disengagement from the property, and it's given to the other individual. So over here, that's what happens. If it goes to the first individual and he's a Yoresh, and you granted him as a Yerusha, you're out of the picture. You can't keep any residual rights in a Yerusha. Residual rights in a Yerusha is what we call Matneya Moshe Kodu BaTorah. You're trying to make a condition on what the Torah said works. You can't do that. You're not allowed to make a Tanai in what the Torah grants to the other individual. So then, what happens here? If he says it goes to you and then after you to someone else, that's too bad. As soon as it reaches the first individual, they take full and complete control over the property as Yerushim. They take full and complete property as Yerushim. Your statement or your condition is meaningless now. And your condition falls away, and the maaseh, the action is complete. That's what we call ma'adam ha-shakadu b'torah, the tanai falls, and the maaseh goes through. So over here, he grants the property, goes through, so this person will be a yoresh, and his yorshim will take it from him, and that's what it means in la'efseh, it could always go down the line of the yorshim, olechet u'mishameshet, whether it's up or down, his yorshim will collect it, but it will not move to the party that you suggested afterwards. The remainder trust will not move to the third party, the person who bequeathed it to this individual, and then to the other will not get it anymore because there's Yerusha over here. So that's what the difference is. That's the nafka mina that Rav Huna is saying, that a Shechem Merah distributes property, whether it goes to the individual as Yerusha, goes to them as Matana. The nafka mina is if there are conditions in that gift. If there are conditions in the gift, when it comes to Matana, he can do that. That's his right. If he gets a gift, he can grant it with a condition. If it goes to the individual as, or it's granted them as Yerusha, you can't have any conditions in it. Why? Because once it's been given as Yerusha, it's all over. It now becomes the ownership of the new individual. Actually, really the way we statement is that the Yoresh steps into the shoes of the Morish. It's not even really a Yerusha that you collect from them, but it's rather you become the Morish. You step into his shoes, and it's as if you are become the new owner of the property by stepping into his shoes, not by being granted the property. Over there, you can't leave any conditions because it's not yours to have conditions in it. Now, when it says, Amalei Rava, the Rav Nachman, Rava said to Rav Nachman, V'ha'ifsega. So wait a minute. He says, he was mafsikit. He stopped it. He said, it goes to you as your Yerusha, and then afterwards to this individual. So you say, in la hefsek, it has no stop, but he made a stop in it. He changed it. So, who savar la yesh la hefsek? Rachman amar, in la hefsek. Yes, he tried to do something, but the Torah says it doesn't work. So if the Torah says it doesn't work when he tried to do it, that's called matneh mashe kaduv b'Torah. Matneh mashe kaduv b'Torah, the matneh, the tznai, falls away. So over here, he thought he could stop the Yerusha. He said, I'll give it to you as Yerusha, and I'll stop it and give it to another party. He thought that would work. Torah says, no way, does not work. Therefore, Yerusha, that which you grant as Yerusha, works. But after that, the residual that you granted to the other individual, that won't work, and it will stay with the first individual because they were Yerushit. So that'll be the nafkamina between whether it's Yerusha or whether it is a matana. And that is the halacha. That's the halacha, kishalach ravacha, because we're going to see that there's cases, we're going to see cases just like this in a second. Oh, damalei lechavrei. Someone says to his friend, nechsai lechav acharecha leploni. Right, so that he grants the property to this individual, and he says after that person to another individual, Rishon, then the Sheni. Rishon ra'oi liyerusha. And the first individual is entitled to it through Yerusha. Right, to have a Yerusha Hava. Shchiv Rishon, if the first one passes away, Ata Sheni, the second individual, the second recipient comes along and katava and asks for it. Savar avilish kamei derovelimar sheni namishakil. So let's do this. This is a remainder trust. You're allowed to do this. So the second claimant should get it. When the first one passed away, he should come and get it. This is against what we just said in our Gemara. So that's what Rav Elish thought to do. But Rav Rova happened to be there at the time. Savar avilish kamei derovelimar sheni namishakil. Malay dina dechatzatzta hocha dini. He says, wait a minute, what type of din are you trying to put over here? So chatzatzta, the word chatzatzta could either mean pshara, right, that someone who compromises, someone who's not a baki in din, therefore cannot adjudicate between parties, just makes a compromise, so they don't have to deal with, you know, actually passing halacha. Or you could say chotzitzin, which means, chatzatzta means mechzalazer, mechzalazer. Or it could be that chatzatzta means beta kfarot. Whatever type of dead end or dead dayan is this. I mean, what type of din are you trying to pass over? This is wrong. What you're doing is wrong. Lav hainu deshalach rav acha bar rav avira. This is exactly the case that we just spoke about. When you grant something and it manifests itself as a Yerusha, that cuts off everything. According to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, it's over at that time. Since you granted as Yerusha, the second party gets nothing. So to over here, the Rishon God received it, and he was a recipient mishum Yerusha because of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. So therefore, the Sheni is not entitled to anything. So Rav Elish, you're wrong. You want to give something to the Sheni. There's nothing to the Sheni. It remains with the Rishon, and that's it. So Ichsif, Rav Elish was embarrassed that he was going to pass them the wrong way. So Kari Alei, Ani Hashem B'itach Hishena. So that says, so Rava says to Rav Elish, to assuage his disappointment or his embarrassment, he says, listen, Hashem, what Rav Elish was afraid was that Rava thinks that he's passing halacha wrong all the time. Just happens to be this time Rava was here to correct him. But Rav's going to think, what type of dayan is this? He does things wrong all the time, and he just says, this time I'm here, I caught him. But otherwise, he's making all these mistakes. So Rav responds to him and says, no, Ani Hashem B'itach Hishena. No, what I think is that generally, you got all your piskei halacha right. This time, there was something wrong, and Hashem doesn't let his tzaddikim make a mistake. So this time, I happen to be here when you gave the psak halacha to correct you. But in general, you get it right. You don't need me in general. It was just this case, Hashem made it that I would be here so I could correct you. That's one explanation. The Masor Sashas brings from the Urch, a different explanation, which is that you're still a young whippersnapper here. Ani Hashem B'itach Hishena. Your time will come. When you're ready for Horah, you won't need me anymore. You won't need to be corrected anymore. But right now, you're still young. You're learning. That's why I'm here. I'm here to teach you and to give you guidance so that when you become on your own, you go out on your own to be a Dayan, everything will be okay. So one of those two possibilities, the Rav is trying to give him nechama, that it's not so bad, either because Hashem made it that I was here for this case, that's the only case that you really needed help, or that you're still young, and eventually you'll grow up and you'll be able to be a Dayan by yourself, but that's why I'm here, to make sure that you make the right decisions now. So new Mishnah, this is a key Mishnah, and the next Gemara is key in the distribution of Yerusha. Hakotev nechasav lacharim. Person who writes out his property or gives grants his property to others, v'niach et banav, and leaves nothing for his children, mashasa asui. What is done is done. The chachamim are not happy with that which he did, meaning that it works, but they don't like what he did. His children don't act appropriately. Zachor the tov. That's a good thing. Because if they're not acting appropriately, why should they be the ones granted the Yerusha? The question here is, how does Rabbi Shimon Gamliel fit into the statement before in the Mishnah? That's the Gemara's first question. Do the Rabbanon disagree with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel or not? Does everyone agree that when the children are of poor quality, or they do not uphold the values of the father, then we say, go ahead, grant it to others. And that's Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is really coming to explain the first case. The first case says you're not allowed to do it because the Chamei aren't happy. Chamei aren't happy, but that's only when the children are behaving properly. If the children are not behaving properly, then the Chamei also agree, give it away. Or, do we say the Chamei say never give it away? You're never allowed to take it away from the children, even when the children are not acting appropriately. Even when the children are not appropriate, you can't give away. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no, when children are acting appropriately, you shouldn't. So that's Machlokas. That's what Gemara says here. By the way, do they argue or not with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? Tashma. We have a great case. The Yosef ben Yoezer, which is probably the Yosef ben Yoezer in the right of vote that we find in Majah. Yolo ben, Shaloyanoi Kushurayat, a child, son who did not act appropriately. Havale Elita de Dinari, he had some sort of Elita here, it's unclear what it means here. Is Elita some sort of Aliyah, a attic full of Dinarim, which would be a derech guzma, some sort of exaggeration. Although from the Tosfos points out later in the Gemara, it sounds like this number is exact. That it's really, it's a number, so that it wouldn't be a guzma. So Elita, the Bein Otam translates as a kli, sheshovim bo yayin and shemen. Some sort of, utensil, almost like a ladle, that you take out the wine and the oil from the barrels from. Some sort of scooping or, utensil that allows you to take it out. So that's what it is. Buckets full or so of money. So he had a bucket full of dinarim. And so what does he do with it? Kam akdasha. One hand it was makdishit to the mikdash. He made a kodesh. So it would go to the base of mikdash. Because why? He wanted to avoid it falling to the sons of his, the hands of his son. So therefore he was makdishit and gave it away to Hekdish. Azal nosiv bat gadil klile de yanai malko. So this was in the time of Yanai, the king. Yanai, the king. So in the time of Yanai, the king, the crown maker of the king, his daughter, the crown maker of the king, the daughter of the crown maker of the king, married Rabbi Yossi ben Ezra's son. So that was the shidduch. The shidduch was the Yossi ben Ezra's son who's not doesn't act appropriately. Goes then and marries the daughter of the crown maker of Yanai Melech. Olida divitu, his wife gave birth. I mean, Yosef ben Ezer's daughter-in-law gave birth. Zavinla benita, they bought her a fish. It's not clear who bought her the fish. Whether it was Yosef ben Ezer or maybe Yanai Malka granted them as a gift a fish, whatever it is. Kara, they opened up the fish to eat it. And Ashkacha Margalita, they found inside of it a diamond. It's like the story of Yosef Mokir Shabta. Same type of story here, that they were granted a fish, they opened up the fish, and all of a sudden there's a diamond inside of it. Amrale, so he gave advice to her, meaning the advice that Yosef ben Yoezer gives to his daughter-in-law, in this case, about how to go ahead and get the most or the proper amount of assessment for this margalit. Says, first of all, I'm like, lo temtaya the malka, don't go sore to the king, the shakala minach v'tmei klile. He'll buy it off of you cheap, because he could take it anyway. So he's just going to take it from you cheap, because either, you know, he'll just say, I don't need this, I have so much anyway, or, you know, for the crowns, it's not so important, you know, so he'll talk you down on the price, and it's not worth going to the king. Zil amte le gabe gizbore. Go take it to the treasurers of Hekdesh. Velo tishayme at, but you don't suggest the price. Why, Damir? Hatolu gvoa, kmisirato lehejot. It's a very interesting usage of the term. In general, we say, Amiratolu gvoa is kmisirato lehejot, that when you make a commitment to Hekdesh, it's the equivalent of a kinyan when it comes to hejot. So if you promise to give a donation to the shul, or if you promise, and in this case, question if it applies there also, if you make a gift to Hekdesh, you say it's going to give a gift to Hekdesh, there's a kinyan you can't back out of it, because Amiratolu is considered like a kinyan. So over here, it's a different usage of this, is that if you come to Hekdesh and you offer to sell it to them at a price, you can't back away from that price. So it's an amazing thing, that you are committed to the price that you say to Hekdesh, even though you underprice the object. So he says, don't offer a price, because if you offer a price, you're locked into that price, even if it's worth more. So what should you do? Elele Shemuo Inu, let the Gizbar, let the treasurer of Hekdesh assess it, and he will be honest and fair. Because they're honest and fair, they will give you the real price for it, number one. Number two is, don't say anything, because then you'll be committed to your price. And number three is, don't go to the king, because he'll underprice you. So go to the most trustworthy, open, fair individual. And who's that? That's the treasurer of Hekdesh. So Amtei, so she went there. Shamua b'tleisar aliyato de dinore. They assessed it at 13 aliyato. Now again, aliyato, that's why before the Rebbeinu Tam, it sounds like it wasn't a guzma, because there were 13 attics worth of of coins. I mean, what's the difference between one attic full of coins and 13 attics full of coins? It's just all guzma. Does it make sense? And it's like here that there's a real number. So if you're talking about this shoev, this bucket, so one bucket versus here, now it's 13 buckets of dinarim. So the treasure of Hekdei says we can buy it off you. We only have 7 buckets worth of coins, not 13, which you share entitled to. So we have 7 and 6 we don't have. So why are they going to buy? They were going to buy it for the Choshen. They needed a stone for the Choshen. Now even though we're in Bayit Sheni over here, in Bayit Sheni there's no Urim Vitumim, nevertheless, the Kohen Gadol still had to wear the Begadim, Big Day Kuna. Big Day Kuna are the Choshen and the Ephod. So they still needed the stones for the Choshen, even though they didn't have the Urim Tumim to call out to Hashem or to speak to Hashem that the Choshen would work in that way. But nevertheless, the Choshen still existed. The Beged of the Choshen was there. Samalu Sheva Havali. So alright, so you only have 7. Pay me 7. Shia Tarei Mugdeshet L'Shamayim. The other 6 are granted to Shamayim, are granted to Hekdesh. So they give it. Out of the 13, she says, listen, I'll give you 6 of them, I'll forgive you, 7 you pay me. Samdu B'Katvu. So afterwards, whether it's the treasurer of Hekdesh wrote this down, or the Chachamim of that door went ahead and wrote down, Yosef ben Yoezer Yechnis Achat. Yosef ben Yoezer gifted one aliyata worth of dinare to Hekdesh, ubno yichni shesh, and his son granted 6 to Hekdesh. I mean, that just, he gave 1, and then his son gave 6. Vigadamer, Yosef ben Ezra yichni sachat, Yosef ben Ezra granted 1, ubno utzi sheva, and his son took out 7. So now, mitkamre, so now the way that it's formulated over here, ichnis, that he granted michlal to shapir avid, sounds like he did the right thing. I mean that Yosef ben Yoezer donated 1 to Hekdesh, and he goes in and donates 6 to Hekdesh. So basically what they were suggesting is that the son, turns out that Rabbi Yosef ben Yoezer was wrong. His son was a good person. Yosef ben Yoezer only gave 1 to Hekdesh. Here his son in the end comes out and gives 6 to Hekdesh. He donates much more than his father to Hekdesh. So it turns out he's a pretty good quality guy. He's a good guy. And Yosef ben Yoezer was wrong in not giving his Yerusha to his son. He made a mistake. He was being Mavir Nachala and he shouldn't have done that. He should have granted it to his son. You see that his son was a good guy in the end. That's it. Somebody says, Adarava, what do you mean? Mitkamrei Hotzi. The second Lashon says that he took out of Hekdesh, Mechad Alav Shapir of it. Sounds like he did the wrong thing. Meaning that, what did he do? He comes along, his son, and says, gives 13, says, I have a stone worth 13. And Hekdesh says, I only have 7. So he says, you know what? Give me the 7. He cleans out Hekdesh. It sounds like if there were 13, he would have taken all 13. Just the fact there were only 7. He cleans out all the treasury of Hekdesh. They have nothing left now. And then he says, all right, the other 6 you keep. Of course, the other 6 he keeps because he can't get any more from them. So he just takes what he can get, and that's it, and he leaves then with all the money. Nothing left to Hekdesh. Sounds like he didn't do the right thing. So which one is it? Did he do the right or not? Well, that depends on which Lashon, the Ikadamre here. So that's what I said. From here, we have no conclusive proof, no conclusion. Why? Because over here, the one Lashon sounds like he was, the Gemara approves what he did. The other Lashon sounds he doesn't approve what he did. So my havi alo. So what's the din? What's the din with when it comes to giving over Yerusha to a proper son versus an improper son? Tashma, Damalei Shmuel, Rav Yehuda, Shinanas, Rav Shmuel, that here upends the sugi or changes the whole dynamic of the sugi over here. It says, Rav Yehuda, Shinanas, Lo Tehave Be Avuri Achsanta, you're not allowed to move Yerusha from children to children, Vafilu Mi Bara Bisha the Bara Tova, even from a bad child to a good child, Uchoshke Mi Bara the Brat, and certainly from a son to a daughter. So this Shmuel creates a huge problem today in what we call wills today, trying to redistribute property. Shmuel makes a blanket statement here, do not change Yerusha. That doesn't matter from bad child to good child. That doesn't matter from son to daughters. You should let the Torah's Yerusha work out the way it should, and it all go to the children and distribute equally to all the sons. And you should not be in there trying to maneuver or whittle out of what the Torah wants. And the Rashbam says over here that we actually paskin like Shmuel over here. It's clear from Shmuel's statement over here that the Chachamim disagree with Rav Shimon Gamliel. Because otherwise, who does Shmuel hold like? Shmuel must be holding like the Rabbanon over here. And if Shmuel holds like the Rabbanon, right, then we have the Rabbim against the Yachid of Rav Shimon Gamliel. And therefore, we're going to paskin like the Rabbim, like the Chachamim in this case. So, but don't we have another place? I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, Allah Rav Shimon Gamliel, except for 3 places. Chulvus Me Arev, Sidan, Menrai Yachronan. This is not one of those 3 places. So Allah should be like Rav Shimon Gamliel. Nevertheless, Shmuel doesn't hold of that principle of Rabbi Yochanan. Shmuel says, no, I don't think that's true. And so what are we paskin? We end up paskin like Shmuel. And that's what the Rishpam lays out over here, that anywhere where the Gemara lays out a principle, we have principles all over the Gemara of how to paskin halacha. For instance, we have halacha that when it comes to things like Rabbi Akiva, halacha is not Mishnah. Halacha ke Rabbi Akiva mechaveiro, uke Rabbi Yosi mechaveiro, ke Rabbi Shimon Gamliel mishnah tein. Whenever Rabbi Shimon appears in the Mishnah, halacha is like him. Relaz Rabbi Yeshua, halacha Rabbi Yeshua. Right, whenever it's a machlokas, relaz Rabbi Yeshua, halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, if it's Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. So all these we pass in halacha. We have principles of halacha. That is true. We will follow those principles of halacha unless the Gemara makes an explicit statement otherwise. But if we have a explicit statement in the Gemara that indicates that we do not go with one of those principles, then we will not hold to the principle. And that's what we have over here. We have Shmuel making a statement that the halacha is like the Chachamim, because he's following the Chachamim over here. And therefore, we are undermining what the normal principle is. The normal principle is that halacha grev Shimon Gamliel. But here, we have an explicit statement in the Gemara, that by an Amora, Shmuel, saying the Chachamim are right. In that case, we will paskin with Shmuel. We will not hold, or we will not be bound by our normal principle that the halacha is like Shimon Gamliel in the Mishnah. Of course, Rabbi Yochanan has the right to disagree, right? So Rabbi Yochanan will disagree with this principle of Shmuel, but at least according to Shmuel, that's the case. And we pass in halacha, as the Rishpam points out, like Shmuel over here. All right, next case. Tarabanan, maseh b'adam echad, she'lo ayu banav, no, agim kishura. A person had a children who were not acting appropriately. Amad, he went ahead with katab nechasav Yonatan ben Uziel. He gifted all of his possessions to Yonatan ben Uziel. Masa Yonatan ben Uziel, so what did Rabbi Yonatan ben Uziel? Machar shlish. He sold a third of it to monetize it so that he would have what to live off of. The Hikdish Shlish, he was Makdish, a third he gave to the Mikdash, he granted to Hikdish. The Chazir Levanav Shlish, and then he granted a third of it back to the children, back to the children of this individual. Balav Shammai b'maklo b'tarmilo. So Shammai came with his stick and his bag, came over to him, meaning that he came rushing over to him to tell him, what are you doing over here? How could you do such a thing? I mean, he came to argue with him. We have a similar story of, in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, uses the terms of maklo and tarmilo. Over there, Rabbi Gamliel forces Rabbi Yeshua to come, b'yom kippurim shalo b'maklo b'tarmilo. He had to carry them so that it would be a clear violation of Yom Kippur for him, in order to establish that the halacha is afilu toim goes like the Beis Din. So Amar Lei Shammai, matay yachol lotzi mashe macharti mashe kedashti, ata yachol lotzi mashe chazarti. So he says, Rabbi Yonatan ben Uziel says to Shammai, who's coming to argue with him, he says, how could you do such a thing? Right? He says, if you could go and take away what I sold, you can return, you can say, what I sold is not a good sale, and what I was makdish is not a good hekdesh, then you can go ahead and tell me that what I granted to his children is also not good. So what exactly is going on? Ilav, if not, yata yecholotzi mashiach sartiv. Then you can't, if it's not that case, then you can't force me to take back what I granted to the children. So Amar, Shammai says back to Yonatan Uziel, he tiach elai ben Uziel, he tiach elai ben Uziel. So the term etiach is used again by the case of Levi. By Levi, who says that he was chutzbah to Rebbe, and that's why Itla Levi. Levi became lame because of that. The Gemara in Sukkah discusses that case, as well as in Tanit, discusses the issue of how Levi became Itla. And over there were two reasons given. One was because he did this type of push-up that caused him a problem. The other one was that he actually etiach lefayim b'vei Rebbe. He spoke chutzbah towards Rebbe. The Gemara then says that they both caused it to him. So etiach lefayim is a chutzbah. So, but here, you know, he's not saying it in a negative term. Shammai is saying it in a joking manner that Yonatan Uziel one-upped me, and that he was right, that he overcame me in this case. So what's the situation over here? So the Gemara is actually going to explain the case. My savar. What did Shammai think, and what was the problem? Shum ma'isa de Beit Choron. Case of Beit Choron, which is a Mishnah in the Darim that we've seen before. It's not. Ma'isa de Beit Choron bechashaya aviv moder menu ana'a. There was one, his father, he had taken a neder, that his father may not get hana'a from any of his possessions. But then, ayam asibino, and then he wanted to marry off his child. I mean, the grandson is now being married off. Amar l'chaveiro. So he wanted his father to be able to attend, the grandfather to be able to attend the wedding. But how could he do that? He's throwing the party, he's making the wedding, and his father's not going to get any benefit from him, so he can't show up. His father can't show up. The grandfather can't be at the wedding. So what does he do? He gives over the property to his friend. Hare chatzer v'suda notim lecha, and netunim lecha, I'm giving you all my possessions, b'matana as a gift. And they're only granted to you so that my father can come and eat the suda. I mean, to circumvent the neder. Whether he said this explicitly or this was implicit in his action, that's a question there in the Gemara Nedarim. But nevertheless, he grants them the property. It's clear that what he wants to do is circumvent the neder. So Amrullah, oh, the friend said to him, Shalihain, if you really granted this property to me and all your possessions to me, harian dashim l'shamayim. Then I make dish them to Shemaim. So I'm like, oh, no, natati lecha et sheli, she'etek tisham l'shamayim. I didn't give them to you to be makdish them to Shemaim. I'm like, oh, no, natati li et shelcha, elo shutei atav v'vicho chlin. The only reason you gave me the property so you and your father can be partying together, shotin and drinking, umaratzin zelazen, and make reconciling between you, ve'avon talu'i b'rosho. And the avon will still be there. Now, whether it's rosho, meaning that my rosh or your rosh, but that you're not really overcoming the problem. Why? Because your gift to me is not a real gift. Why? Because amru chachamim kol matana sheni ma sheni eina shim hikdisha mukdeshet ein matana. Any gift that's granted without the right or the ability to be makdishit, then that's not a gift. A gift is something that you give to an individual where they have full control over the gift. The recipient has full control. If the recipient has full control, then they can be makdishit, they can do whatever they please with this item. So if they want to do whatever they please with this item, then it's considered a gift. But if they can't do what they please with it, it's not a gift. So same thing here, in this case, in Beit Chiron, what did he do? He granted him the gift to circumvent the nether. But did he grant him? It's not a real matana. Why not? Because he can't be makdishit. You're not granting it to me to do whatever I want with it. If I can do whatever I want with it, then it's a real gift, and then you could circumvent the neder because I'm throwing the party. But if you're granting it to me and I don't have a right to be makdishit, then you really didn't give it to me. You're just pretending to give it to me. You're doing a fiction here, or making it look like it was granted to me so that you can party with your father, even though the neder is still outstanding and you really haven't circumvented the neder. So Shammai thought that would be the same thing in our case. Shammai thought here, in this case, with the father and the son, that in this instance, the father says to grants the property to Yonatan Ben-Uziel, doesn't say anything. But it's implicit in the fact that he granted it to Yonatan Ben-Uziel that he doesn't want his children to get it. It's almost like there's a tznai embedded in the gift. And then Yonatan Ben-Uziel goes in and gives the money back to the children. So if he gives the money back to the children, he's violating the condition of the gift to Yonatan Ben-Uziel. If he violates the condition of the gift granted, then it shouldn't work. The gift is not a good gift. So Yonatan Ben-Uziel sends back to him, listen to me, wait a minute, these cases are totally different. Why are these cases totally different? Because, look, I sold it. If I had sold a property, would you have complained about that? No. If I was makdishit, would you have complained about it? The answer is no. That's what I did. I gave a third to Ekdesh, I sold a third. Why am I allowed to be makdishit, and why am I allowed to sell it? Because the father who gave me this gift gave it to me without any stipulations in it, so I can do with it as I please. If I want to sell it, I can sell it. If I want to makdishit, I can makdishit. That's true of me giving it to his children. If I want to give it to his children, it's fully mine, it's all mine. If I want to do it, I can do what I want. He never made an explicit stipulation in the gift. Had he made an explicit stipulation in the gift, then maybe we could speak about it. Then we could discuss about what's residual, what's left over in the gift. But over here, he made no explicit instructions. If you give me explicit instruction, then I can do with it as I please. And my pleasure is to sell a third, to be makdish a third, and to give back to his children a third. And that's my choice, and I may do that, as opposed to Beit Chiron, where he's explicit, or it's clear from the context that all he's trying to do is circumvent the nether, and he's not gifting it to the other individual to have real ownership over it. And therefore, it doesn't work, because if he doesn't have real ownership over it, he's never really given it to him. If he hasn't given it to him, then he can't circumvent the nether. So it's just interesting. Tosfos makes a couple of points here that are very important. One point he makes over here, which is that the story in the Yerushalmi is brought down about the father of Yonatan Ben-Uziel. That the father of Yonatan Ben-Uziel didn't want to, when he became religious and he was a big Talmud Chacham, his father disowned him in that case. And then later on, he had the same problem, that the property was not given to another, but it was given to another party. And then that party gave a portion of it to Yonatan Ben-Uziel. So that's the story. It's way in the Yerushalmi. It's clear that whether the Tosfos over here says, Shemazel Maseh Tzmoyah V'Yerushalmi Mapechla. Maybe it's the exact same case, just Yerushalmi got the case backwards or changed the case around. Whatever it is, it seems to be that Yonatan Ben-Uziel was somehow involved in this case. Whether he was the recipient of the gift or whether he was the child that was disowned over here, that's unclear between the Yerushalmi and the Bavli. The other thing is, when we say that it has to be something matana sheni ma'ekdesh mekdeshet, is that really true? Is that a statement? Is that a definitive statement that only when you're able to be makdishit, then it works? Otherwise, it doesn't work as a gift. Then Tosa says, well, what about a matana manat achzir? We say that a gift is on condition you return it. That's a good gift. And you can use it, for instance, for etrog and for lulav when you need to be lechem, when it has to be owned by you to be yotzei the mitzvah. Over there, we allow you to do it. So how does that work? There you can't be makdishit because you have to return it to the other individual. If you don't return it to him, it's not a good gift. We say that you never had it if you don't fulfill the obligation there. So Tosfos gives one answer, which is, yeah, during the period of time when you own it, you could be makdishit. You could be makdishit for that temporary period, and Ekdesh will get the value of it during that period. So that's one answer of Tosfos. The second answer of Tosfos seems to make more sense, which is the Ri. According to the Ri, Niraj will tell you, matana behekdesh. That matana has nothing to do with Hekdesh. That just happens to be the case in Beit Choron, that the guy said, I'll be makdishit, and it didn't work. So therefore he says, any matana that doesn't have Hekdesh in it, that's not a matana. But that's not the answer. It's lav dafko hekdesh and makdeshit. But right, that the case here is al kol matana shikumase beit choron, that there's some sort of orma, then it's not a matana. Not that it has to be. Of course you can put conditions into a gift, but if it's only done, if the gift is only granted and these conditions are placed in there to circumvent some halacha, for instance, the gift is only done to get out of a neder over here, but it's not a real gift, then it doesn't work. A gift has to be a full granting of ownership. Now you can put conditions in that full granting of ownership, but the conditions can't be so onerous that it just proves that all you're trying to do is circumvent the problem or trying to get around the nether over here. That won't work. That's not real ownership. What you want is a granting of full ownership. That granting of full ownership has to be obvious and complete. And once you've granted full ownership, then the recipient party can do as they please. If they can do that as they please, then you really have circumvented the halacha because it's not yours anymore. And so that's all that the Gemara is after here. The Gemara is after is making sure that it's a real gift and not simply a way to circumvent the halacha, just a ploy, and you're not really gifting. You know, you don't really mean to gift it them. You don't really give over, believe, shalem. And obviously there's a lot to talk about it. This with Mechirat Chametz, that this sugya or this issue will come up in Mechirat Chametz, but we'll discuss it maybe when we discuss the Gemara in Pesachim. All right, we'll stop over here.